Good afternoon, everybody. Or in the case of our guests, good morning. Or in the case of our listeners, good evening. Wherever you're listening around the world or around the United States, this is Sports Betting Tips with Chris Sheridan. I'm really pleased to be joined by about as high profile of a guest as I've had in 24 hours because Rick Pitino was on yesterday. And David, you're pretty close with Rick in terms of stature in the basketball world. You really are. Anybody who's
That's news to Rick. I can promise you that.
Yeah, well, I would agree with you on that one. But joining us is former Cleveland Cavaliers general manager David Griffin, now working for SiriusXM NBA channel and NBA TV. You can see him in both of those places. If you live out in Northern California, David is now in the wine business with his wife and enjoying some time away from having to live the 24/7 grind of running an NBA team. David, thanks for joining us. And you're coming to us today from Manhattan Beach because you're out there covering the Lakers or taking a good close look at the Lakers. And aside from the Jimmy Butler trade talks, you know, LeBron and the Lakers is topic one and 1A and 1B on everybody's mind. So let's start there. What are you seeing right now with the Los Angeles Lakers and what they've done in the preseason thus far and how they've looked in practice?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Not getting to watch very much of practice, what you get a feel for is just the vibe and the energy these guys have. The young players that they really need to take a quantum leap forward are really bought in, both to LeBron and Rondo, the leadership that they provide, but also, more importantly, into one another. There's a real camaraderie and chemistry between Kyle and Lonzo and Brandon. They care about one another, and I think when you can come at this from that perspective and you're not fighting over who gets the extra shine outside of LeBron, it enables you to be all about the right things. And I was really struck by the fact that everybody from Pelinka to Luke Walton to LeBron to Rondo, they're all sort of singing the same song right now, and that's a really meaningful start.
Now, a lot of teams sing the same song, especially in preseason. It's all good in preseason. Everybody thinks they're going to go 82-0, except for this year, the Atlanta Hawks. I don't think that are thinking that. But, you know, optimism abounds in the preseason. And then, you know, you can have some monkey wrench thrown in at any given moment that just, you know, turns your season upside down. You've had it happen to you in Cleveland. You've seen it happen year after year after year in the NBA. And when you look at this Laker roster, especially with Rondo ball handling as much as he is and kind of keeping LeBron off the ball a little bit. And then there's always the Lonzo Ball aspect. Where do you see maybe a potential monkey wrench being or coming into play for this Laker team?
Well, I think it'll ultimately be seen more in the playoffs. It's the most efficient playmaking ball dominant player in the NBA is LeBron James. And the bigger the moment, the more important it is that he have the ball. And with Rondo, you have a guy who has to be ball dominant. He's not going to be terribly effective spacing off of the ball. So from that standpoint, you worry that when the game slows down in playoff basketball, do they have enough shooting to space out around LeBron? And that's why I don't care who they start the season with their starters. I think the guys that will end up finishing the season and playing the bulk of the minutes in the fourth quarter could very well be Kuzma, Ingram, Josh Hart with LeBron, because I think those guys, you know, those four have an incredibly good fit together. And if they chose not to play a traditional center, you know, yesterday we spoke to Kyle Kuzma, and he said that the biggest adjustment for him has been learning how to play some minutes at the five. So if you look at a lineup that could feature LeBron, Lonzo, Hart, Kuzma, and Ingram, well, that's a team now that has incredible length and versatility, and they've got ancillary playmaking in the form of Lonzo, who does not need the ball nearly as much as Rondo does to be effective. Brandon Ingram is also a secondary playmaker in that situation. That team could get out and be really versatile in transition. And when the game slows down and LeBron has the ball, which he will and he will want it, you'll be able to space enough shooting around it.
Yeah, the Lakers right now are sitting at 14-1 to win the NBA championship, which is a high number for any LeBron team, especially when the guy's been to 8 straight NBA finals. The over-under on their wins has dropped. It continues to drop. It's down to 47.5. And about a month ago, David, there was just a lot of action coming in on the Lakers under. And it's what's called sharp money. The guys that are known to be smart bettors were betting the under on the Lakers hard. And then what they call the other side of the coin, the soft money, was coming in on, or the square money was coming in on Lakers over. And that was back when the over under was 50 or even 50 and a half. Irregardless of where the line is, what do you think the right number is in terms of regular season wins for this team? Now, given the fact that they could make a lot of changes at the February trade deadline, especially given the number of guys they have on one-year deals and the number of players that want to join up with LeBron.
Yeah, so the 14-1 you mentioned for them to win the championship, despite the fact that he's been to 8 straight finals, I think speaks to the fact that he was in 8 straight finals in the Eastern Conference. And so people are taking into account the strength of the Western Conference, and that's the thing that I think is so staggering about the over-under number as well. You could be under that number by one and not make the playoffs in the Western Conference. It's so incredibly deep. 3 through 11 are going to be really jumbled up. LeBron hasn't needed to go through a gauntlet like that in the Eastern Conference for quite some time. And so I think what remains to be seen is, what does it look like for him playing in the conference where he's got to play Golden State 4 times? He's going to play Houston 4 times. He's going to play Utah 4 times. That's going to change the complexion of things quite a bit.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And then, you know, look, the Spurs are a tough team. The Thunder are a tough team. I mean, last year we saw, I think it was 2 games or 3 games separated 3 through 9, and it went down to the last night of the season. And again, there's a couple teams that are better than last year that were a little below that bubble. Utah right now is sitting at 49.5 as far as their over-under win total. Portland's at 42, which, you know, they expect them to be a 500 team. Oklahoma City is at 48.5, and I think that's low. The New Orleans Pelicans are at 45.5. I mean, there's a ton of good teams out there. And then when you look at Golden State being such a prohibitive favorite to repeat as champion, if you had to pick really one team, David, that nobody's in the West is paying close enough attention to, and a team that can actually beat the Lakers or beat Golden State in a best of 7 series, who would you say that team would be?
I don't think Utah gets talked about nearly enough, in large part because they didn't make a big sexy move in the offseason. What they're about,
they didn't make any moves anymore. They didn't make any moves.
Yeah, what they're about is continuity. And I think what they're going to be about is the growth of young players and Donovan Mitchell taking another step forward, which is hard to even imagine based on the rookie year he had. But I look at Utah as the second best team in the West. And I think if Rubio's healthy in that playoff series against Houston, they may have vanquished Houston before they even got a chance to play Golden State. And I look at them as a team because of Quinn Snyder, the way his defense is structured. They have a chance to provide that sort of kryptonite-like look to Golden State that they don't necessarily see all the time, which could change the dynamic of a series a little bit, particularly if Golden State is playing DeMarcus Cousins by then, because the presence of Gobert makes even more sense and has even a bigger impact. So the way those teams set up to me makes Utah a really interesting team. And I think you said they're over-under 49.5. If I'm right and they're the second-best team in the West, then somebody else in the West is going to win 50 besides Golden State.
Mm. They're actually 65-1 right now to win the championship, which is a very, very high number. And a lot of people in Utah and surrounding states would say that's a value bet, because this is a good team and we're bringing everybody back. Joe Ingles has been one of the greatest three-point shooters in the NBA over the past 3-4 years. Maybe they'll let him into the three-point shootout this year. And, you know, I ran into Jermaine O'Neal, David, at a Big Three event in Brooklyn a couple months ago, and he said the same thing you said. Nobody's looking at these guys, and look what they did last year to Golden State. They beat them by 30, and then they beat them by 30 again, and they beat them by 19. So it's you're not alone in pumping up the Utah Jazz. It's just that they're a small market team, and they don't get the attention that the big ones do.
And Chris, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but they also have what Golden State had, right? They've got a young developing nucleus that's going to be together for years. And that's the most important thing for beating Golden State. If you keep changing who you are and what your look is, you'll never find enough trust and faith in one another in the biggest moments of games to beat a team that has the level of continuity Golden State's had. They added Kevin Durant to a 73-win team. The nucleus of that team was a 73-win team. So you're not going to catch them by changing what you do. You're going to catch them eventually because your nucleus grows to a point that it crescendos to the point Golden State's is falling off. And that's why I love what Utah's done. And Dennis Lindsay doesn't get nearly enough credit in terms of executive of the year conversation every year.
Well, I think the Utah guys get short shrift in everything. And they're just not an exposed team. But they are on the Christmas lineup this year. They're the last game of the night, and they'll be playing Portland, and they're worth watching. And look, if you like backing them at 65-1, that's what you would call a value bet. David, I want to turn though to the story that everybody's kind of paying the closest attention to in the NBA right now, and that's the Jimmy Butler situation in Minnesota. You've been in dicey front office situations before, and you've been under pressure to make trades before from ownership. And that's certainly the case going on right now with Glenn Taylor, the owner of the Timberwolves, Scott Layden, the GM, and Tom Thibodeau, the coach. There's a lot of pressure on Scott to make a trade and to make a trade yesterday. How do you think that's impacting the offers he's receiving, and how do you think Scott's kind of managing that?
Yeah, so I think it's a really, really difficult situation to win anytime you're not in lockstep in terms of head coach, front office, and ownership. And it's fairly clear by the way this has played out that they are not. And I think that's one reason that in the recently released NBA GM survey, by way of example, Minnesota fell off the most in terms of where people are predicting they finish and how much people value Karl Anthony Towns as an asset for the future and things like that, because this sort of thing starts to pollute your thinking. And I think it's fairly clear that when the owner goes to a Board of Governors meeting and says, I don't care what my guys tell you, we are trading Jimmy Butler, that's a really meaningful thing in terms of undermining the quality of deal you're going to be able to make. And I think it really hamstrings Scott Layden. And Scott's also dealing with a situation where Tibbs has made it clear he has absolutely zero desire to trade Jimmy Butler. So now it's almost a situation where in order to get something done to please ownership, you would have to make the kind of deal that you could only make if you had the sort of connectedness that San Antonio has always had. You know, they have incredible mm-hmm. leverage because Pop is the unquestioned leader. That's how you make the best deals, because no means no. Danny Ainge, same situation. They make great deals because everyone knows Danny has the power, and Scott's in a very difficult position because nobody perceives that to be the case.
So in your experience, if you're kind of got a gun to your head, how does that impact the flexibility of other teams' offers? Like in this case, it's clear that Minnesota would like to do a deal with Miami if Bam out of Io or Josh Richardson was in that deal, but Miami doesn't want to give up on either of those guys. So it's kind of a who blinks first thing, but you've been there. So what's it like when it's playing a who blinks first game?
Yeah, and I think the who blinks first game really comes down to the level of relationship you have with the player and the agent and how much you can impress upon them. Look, we're not making a deal that's bad for us, because you know unequivocally that the agent is talking to the other team. And you're not supposed to be, but they are. And it's just how that works. And so if I'm Miami and I know that it's a three-alarm fire in Minnesota, I'm absolutely going to hold on to Richardson. I'm going to hold on to Adebayo because I can. And I think what has to happen is if Jimmy Butler shows back up and he plays ball for Minnesota, which I think he's willing to do, I think what will happen is the urgency and the immediacy of watching him be dominant on both sides of the court will make acquiring teams more interested, because there's the recency bias of all of this nonsense and you forget how good he really is. So mm-hmm. if you see him be dominant, I think you're more likely to be interested. If more teams came into the conversation, that would make it more necessary for Miami to give up more. And I know Minnesota is at least right now unified in the no- get a better deal.
Speaking of a guy who's shown something, once you see him on the court and maybe his value goes up, Hassan Whiteside's had a couple real dominant preseason games. They actually started him alongside Olynyk the other night, which is a look they've never really shown. Everybody in the NBA knows, David, that Miami tried all summer to trade Hassan Whiteside. But now that he's come out in the preseason and had two pretty dominant games in relatively low minutes, does that change the trade value on him, or is that too small of a sample size?
Well, I think it's too small of a sample size in large part because everything that Hassan Whiteside was on and off the court was known to the rest of the league before Miami got him. There's a reason they got him for minimum when they did. And because of their culture and because of the way they attack player of the talent of Hassan Whiteside in terms of getting him to be part of the program, they had really incredible success of turning him from what was a player that had been waived five times previously, including being released from Lebanon, into a maximum salary center. So when you look at the fact that Miami was able to do that, as an acquiring team, you have to acknowledge, I'm not sure we have what Miami is. I'm not sure I've got the Pat Riley character that can build that sort of net around Hassan. They had that already. It existed in Miami. So he just sort of integrated into it. If you don't have that already, it's going to limit your interest in Hassan. And now you add to it the fact that he makes the amount of money he makes heading into an offseason where as many as 15 teams can have max cap space, and many of those teams have cap space for two max players. Taking his number on your books is not an attractive thing. So you mentioned they tried all summer, and certainly Minnesota was resisting taking the contract. I think one of the impediments to getting a deal done for Miami and Minnesota is Miami has been adamant Whiteside be part of the deal, and Minnesota's been adamant no matter what other pieces you throw into it, we're not taking it. And I think, again, the sample size, I don't know that he could play a full season in Miami and people would still be in the space where they feel like they can get the most out of him in the same way that Pat Riley and Miami did.
Yeah. Miami's an interesting team to watch because when there's a guy like Butler's caliber out there, or when there's a guy out there the caliber of Kawhi Leonard, Pat's in the game, and he was in the game on Kawhi. He's definitely in the game now on Butler. When you look at the odds, though, this is going to throw you for a loop. There's the longest odds of any team to win the championship is 250-1, and here are those teams: the Knicks. Not going to win. Phoenix, not going to win. Cleveland, no. Chicago, no. But Detroit is at 250-1. They had a better offseason than people give them credit for. Brooklyn's at 250-1. Charlotte's 250-1. Sacramento, Atlanta, Memphis, Orlando. But so is Miami. 250-1 to win the title with a team that plays Eric Spoelstra's system very, very well, and a team that could be one move away from bringing in a player, Jimmy Butler, who's one of the best two-way teams in the league. What's your take on that, David?
Yeah, and those odds are incredibly long on Cleveland as well, just being a team that's been to the finals, being a team that has a coach who's won a championship, has a superstar player in Kevin Love who can, you know, dominate an offense. During conference, you're not looking at the depth of quality teams that there is in the West by a long shot, right? I mean, at one point before Kawhi was traded to Toronto, 14 of the top 15 players in the NBA in wins above replacement resided in the Western Conference. So now mm-hmm. it's 13 of 15. So now if you look at it, if Jimmy Butler were to move east, that means what's that? Three? That'd be three of the best 15 players and wins above replacement would be in the East. Well, that's a hell of a lot easier path to the finals alone. And, you know, Miami's already shown if they get there, what they are culturally can be enough to overcome a more talented team. The championship they won when they beat Dallas, by way of example, many people thought Dallas was going to steamroll that series, and they got a transcendent performance from Wade and Shaq and were able to do it. So I don't know that I don't want to face them in a final. So it certainly makes 250-1 seem really long to me.
Yeah, I remember that finals. Dwayne Wade shot a lot of free throws, as he did an awful lot early in his career. So let's start taking a look at some of the player props. And it reminds me that this podcast is hosted on it lives on GetMoreSports.com. That's my new home since the end of May. But the guys paying the bills are BetDSI.com. This is one of the most reputable offshores in the world. And if you go to BetDSI.com and make a deposit and enter the bonus code BBALL1000, that's BBALL, all capital letters, 1000, they'll match it. They'll give you a free $1,000. They'll give you a $25 free play. If you're listening overseas, you got to go to BetDSI.eu. And same thing goes. Whatever the equivalent is of $1,000, they're going to match it. There's just all sorts of really cool NBA player props up right now. The triple-double props are being formulated as we speak. But I want to run some of these odds past you, David. Rookie of the Year, Luka Doncic is favored. DeAndre Ayton is second. Colin Sexton third. Kevin Knox fourth. I think Kevin Knox is not a bad bet at plus 650 because the Knicks are going to have his usage very high. Trae Young is plus 950. Marvin Bagley is 10-1. Wendell Carter 11-1. Is there a guy missing from that list that you think should be given consideration for having a legit shot at Rookie of the Year?
You know, it's interesting. Wendell Carter, until you said his name, was one that I put a lot of stock in. And again, knowing nothing about gambling and basketball, I can't be useful to you in terms of the odds or the plus whatever. But Wendell Carter is a guy that he has a chance simply by virtue of role and how incredibly polished and ready to perform at the NBA level he is, that I think you could put a lot of value in what he's going to be able to do for Chicago. They've got a lot of young talent around him. Positionally, he's a perfect fit with that talent. He's going to get minutes. Fred Hoiberg's offense is one that he's really going to look good in because he's got an Al Horford-like ability to make plays for others as a big. So he's a guy that I think has a chance. And again, because he's in the Eastern Conference, there's just much less competition. If they can make a jump in wins by virtue of the fact that they're competing in that conference, I think he gets a lot of love there. And I would say the same thing about Colin Sexton. Colin's going to be a ball-dominant play creator on a team that a lot of people think is just going to fall into the bottom rung of the East, and I'm not one of those people. I think they're very clearly a playoff-caliber team, and Colin's going to get the opportunity to be the starting point guard and ball-dominant play creator alongside Kevin Love, so his numbers will look good as well. So those are guys that I would look at and think would have a really good opportunity. And of course, when Doncic, you're talking about a guy who went to exactly the right team and the right coach. They've had great success as an organization bringing along international players. Dirk was one of his idols as a player growing up. He's going to listen to all of the impact, or rather all of the influence that Dirk can have upon him. And then Rick Carlisle is a guy offensively that has an incredible gift for taking advantage of player skill sets. So Luka is a guy I understand why he's favored, certainly.
Yeah, and I haven't voted many times for MVP and Rookie of the Year and Coach of the Year and all the stuff that media votes on. To me, winning really factors in a great deal, especially in MVP voting and Coach of the Year voting, but not so much in Rookie of the Year. If there's a guy on a bad team that was just clearly, by virtue of his numbers and what he meant to his team, the best rookie, I'd vote for him because I don't think winning matters so much in that contest, in that particular award, Rookie of the Year voting. But when it comes to MVP voting, I always say, look, best player on the best team, or maybe the best player on the team that surprised the most. And that's why when I look at the MVP odds coming into this season, they've fallen pretty far on a bunch of guys, but Kyrie Irving right now is 40-1, and there's a good chance the Boston Celtics are above 60 wins. And Kyrie's in a contract year. That's when guys typically perform their very best because they want to get that next contract. The favorite right now, there's two favorites, both at 3-1. David, Anthony Davis and Giannis Antetokounmpo at 3-1, and then right behind them are James Harden and LeBron James, and then the odds start to drop off. But What about Kyrie and the Celtics, and what about that 40-1 number?
Yeah, so it's fascinating to me. I agree with everything you said on the impact of winning on the voting. I look at last year, we were so spoiled in the Rookie of the Year race. We had Ben Simmons, Jason Tatum, and Donovan Mitchell all leading really good playoff teams. And I think it sort of changed your thought process on Rookie of the Year a little bit. And I think wins will come into play with that. And it's because it's always come into play on MVP, and taking a jump from year over year has always come into play. And I actually think that LeBron is in a very similar situation in L.A. what Steve Nash was when he came to our team in Phoenix. And we brought him into a team that had really young talent in Amari Stoudemire, Joe Johnson, Sean Marion, all of whom I would argue were radically more accomplished than the young talent on the Laker team. But Steve came to that team, and we took an enormous jump in terms of wins. And a lot of what he did was also the impact of a new style on the league. You know, Mike D'Antoni sort of unleashed 7 seconds or less at the same time with Nash at the helm of that. And all of those things coalesced into, boom, he's MVP. And I think LeBron is in that situation right now in L.A. Those young kids are going to really benefit from his presence. They probably didn't win as much as they could have last year because at some point they sort of gave up the ghost and realized they weren't a playoff team. Well, those young kids, if they're in the hunt and LeBron is playing at the level he's capable of playing at, they're going to be good defensively. They're going to be in transition, and that's going to create huge assist numbers for LeBron. So I look at him as a guy who might have the best chance he's had to be MVP in quite a long time this year.
That's a mouthful, 4-1. I mean, getting LeBron at any kind of price where you can quadruple your money is never really a bad bet. But 4-1, and you're speaking pretty strongly on his chances. It's just interesting.
Well, it's just really interesting to me in terms of the parallels with our Phoenix team. And I would tell you that Kyrie at 40-1 is crazy to me just based on the fact that he's coming back healthy. The point you made about his contract year, you know, availability is a skill set. And Kyrie has suffered at times from injuries during a course of a year that has derailed what could have been an MVP candidacy before. And I think at this particular point, he's going to be the best version of himself on a team that has incredible young pieces with Hayward coming back. They may not be able to make the quantum leap forward in terms of wins and losses because Brad got so much out of that group last year, but they're going to be playing on national TV the maximum allowable number of times, and he's going to be special good the vast majority of those nights because he's a kid who rises to the occasion. So I think it tees up for him in a very positive way as well for a lot of the reasons we talked about before with the Eastern Conference not having transcendent players to begin with. You get a big edge if you're clearly the number one guy in your conference.
Yeah, there's some really interesting MVP odds. I mean, Russell Westbrook is 18-1. You know, Carl Anthony Towns was 100-1. Now he's at 45-1. His odds keep dropping. Donovan Mitchell's 50-1. Jokic is 100-1. John Wall 75-1. Paul George 100-1. You know, there's a bunch of those guys where you say, hey, if things fall right, you know, that could definitely be the guy, and that's just a crazy bet. But that's kind of why preseason prospects are so interesting.
Of those guys you just ran through, Jokic is, to me, the guy who has the chance to be the most prolific statistically in a freakish way. Their whole offense is designed around his ability to make plays for people and to put up assist numbers. So there are very, very few 6'11", 7-foot kids that are going to take the ball off the rim, dribble full court the other way, and make a play on a three-quarter court baseball pass on the bounce in traffic and hit a guy dead in the hands. And he can do that. He has a gift for passing the ball that we haven't seen in a big man probably since Vlade Divac. Chris Webber was one of those guys. But I think he is the best passer, maybe not just among bigs. He might be the best passer of anybody in the NBA under 25.
Wow, that's a mouthful. He's 100-1 again on the board at betdsi.com. And Again, if you go to betdsi.com in the United States or betdsi.eu anywhere else, use bonus code BBALL1000, all capital letters, BBALL1000, and they'll match your initial deposit up to $1,000. And David, we're going to wrap here, and I'm going to throw you a curveball that you're not expecting. Jimmy Butler is obviously the player most likely to be traded in the NBA. After him, who in your book is the player most likely to be traded?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't think, in fairness, I have an answer right off the top of my head, and a big part of it is because teams like Cleveland are going to have to wait and see what they look like. If they come together as a quality playoff team, I think Kevin Love absolutely stays put. But I think Kevin Love signing the contract that he did gave them so much optionality that if they get to a point where holding on to their pick becomes a premium, Kevin's the type of player that's going to be in demand with teams that are trying to win playoff games. You know, Golden State's almost warped the league in the sense that if you're in the Western Conference, you almost don't even feel like a small incremental get makes you significantly better. You almost have to acquire just a name brand all-star, or you feel like, what's the point? And I think to some degree people fall prey to that because of Golden State's level of dominance. And in the Eastern Conference, I think it's a little bit different. I think people think Boston can still be beaten. They haven't necessarily come together. Toronto hasn't come together. So the teams you're expecting to be the best in the conference haven't proven it over time. So you may see more deals around the edges in the East. But I guess the name that I think of right off the top of my head that could be truly transcendent in his impact, if Cleveland were to go that route, would be Kevin Love. But I think it's probably just as likely he's there all year.
Yeah, a lot can happen over the course of the season, and then when teams start to underachieve real early, the guys become available. And along those lines, what about Marc Gasol in Memphis?
Yeah, he's a name that's certainly going to be of interest to teams. You know, his contract length isn't too onerous for teams that would acquire him. He's got a big number, but it's not for a lot of years. So I think that's something that would make him attractive. You know, he's got an opt-out on $26 million next year. So that's a little bit daunting, but it's not a terrible number of years moving forward. Whereas Conley, who would be exactly the kind of point guard that Phoenix needs, by way of example, to get to the next level, his contract is just so daunting that I don't think you'll see him get moved.
Yeah, he was the highest paid player in the NBA the last 2 years, and a lot of people don't realize that. And then when they hear it, they're like, "No way, really? Yeah, for sure." That's what happens when you don't have smoothing. So that's going to be a wrap for this afternoon. This is episode 20 of Sports Betting Tips with Chris Sheridan. I'll be back at you with another good guest as soon as I can find one. Certainly, I had a great one today, David Griffin, and Rick Pitino was really informative yesterday afternoon. So, David, again, thanks for joining us. And folks, pay attention to David when he's on SiriusXM or when you see him on NBA TV. He's damn good at what he does. He was a damn good GM. He was a damn good PR guy back in the day. I knew him then. But he's really good on TV, and he's really good on the radio, and he brings a lot to the table for all the organizations that he's offering insight to. And so, David, thanks for coming on this afternoon.
I really appreciate it. And just keep in mind, you don't want to take the kind of step down you took from a Hall of Famer to me when you go to your next guest. So you're probably going to hit a home run and do better.
All right, I'll call Charles Barkley, and we'll see if we can get something on the air with him. So
there you go. By way of example, a significant step forward.
All right, thanks very much. That's a wrap. We'll be back at you very soon. Over and out.